I'm Georgie Frost, and this is the Brexit Ready podcast from Audio UK. We're talking to people in or around the audio business in Britain, as well as getting expert opinion on what the landscape might be after Brexit and how companies should be preparing. There's obviously a lot of uncertainty right now, and even after a deal is struck or not struck, of course, things may change. But it is also important to look at the current opportunities for the industry in the medium term, whether that's finding ways to partner with other European outlets or tapping more effectively into English-speaking markets like the US and Australia. In the US alone, the podcasting market is estimated to be 140 million people. With an enormous global English-speaking market and the current boom for the audio industry and podcasting, is there more that British producers can do to capitalise? We'll find out a little bit more. Steve Ackerman is the Managing Director of Something Else, one of the biggest independent production companies specialising in audio in the UK. They produce content for the BBC and many other commercial companies. Thanks for joining us, Steve.
Hello.
Just give us a flavour, if you would, an idea of some of the names that you're currently working with. What are you up to?
Well, I suppose some of the key titles would be, on the podcast front, would be big shows with people like Jay Rayner and David Tennant, as well as scripted factual shows such as the current hit podcast, the Fred and Rose West Tapes. But also, obviously, a lot of shows for the BBC, and that ranges everything from The Kitchen Cabinet and Gardener's Question Time on Radio 4 through to Kermode and Mayo's Film Review on Radio 5, and then a lot of music shows for the music networks as well.
What sense are you getting abroad, particularly we mentioned there the US market, that there's an appetite for the podcast, for the names, for the things that you're doing here over there?
Well, I think there's an appetite for good storytelling, and so it doesn't matter necessarily where that storytelling comes from. I mean, clearly some podcasts are going to be specific to markets, and particularly if those are talent-driven podcasts. But I think podcasts that centre on factual storytelling have every chance of resonating beyond the UK, and we've certainly seen that on a personal level with some of our releases.
Obviously, we're talking about this in a Brexit context and what that may look like and the deals and no deals going forward. We're yet to know. But in terms of you and Something Else, deal, no deal, it's not does it matter, but I suppose what have you been doing to lead up to it, and how do you think that things are going to be different after we have a deal or no deal, after we Brexit?
Well, it's a good question. I suppose the difficulty that just, you know, as with many other businesses we're having is just trying to understand what it all means and figure out the implications. I suppose the plus we have is that from an audio perspective, we're not physically exporting anything. If we upload a show to Apple, we can obviously do that in the UK, and just by ticking a few boxes, it can be heard elsewhere in the world without us necessarily having to cross any physical borders as such. And so therefore, it could well be that I think from an audio perspective, we're in a slightly more fortunate position. I mean, we are, I suppose the other issue we're keeping an eye on is we do have a small office in New York as well. And clearly, there could be implications around what deal eventually the UK and the USA end up doing and how that might implicate on us, particularly around employment law. But for the moment, it seems to be business as usual on that front.
Which is rather nice, sort of positive spin on it. But I suppose, are there any more practical considerations in terms of EU nationals that you perhaps employ here? The audio industry is, you know, no man is an island, no industry is an island, and we're obviously going to be impacted by what goes on elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, from an employment perspective, obviously, It is a real concern. Probably like many businesses, we certainly are not a British only group who work at Something Else. We do have people who have come from the European Union and elsewhere to work here, and obviously we've been looking at what that might mean for them in terms of settled status. Not all of them have necessarily been here for more than 5 years. And again, I think at the moment it does seem unclear, and aside from getting legal advice, we've been struck that it's been difficult to really establish what else we can do at the current time.
I want to ask you a little bit more about, I suppose, podcasting. We've seen it boom in this country of recent years. It's really taken a hold.
So it's in a very good place right now.
It's actually an amazing time to be an audio producer, and I really don't say that lightly, but this is the most exciting time I have ever seen in the audio landscape, and obviously at the heart of that is podcasting. And the UK isn't the only place that's seeing a podcasting boom. I mean, this is going on right across, first of all, the English-speaking world, and now spreading to the other major territories as well, France, Germany, Spanish-speaking territories, South America. So the opportunities are really vast. I mean, it genuinely is a very, very exciting moment. Audio seems to be going through the moment that happened for TV maybe 4 or 5 years ago when SVOD, you know, Netflix and Amazon, when on-demand viewing started really seeping into the public consciousness as a habit. And I think audio seems to be following a similar trend now.
What do you put that down to?
Well, I think one of the key factors is that as audiences become more used to choice and being empowered to make their own choices, they understand how to navigate through these worlds and make use of them. And frankly, once your media habit has switched to one where you are much more a consumer of on-demand audio, why would you go back to live and just hoping that you're going to chance upon something that you might like? And as I mentioned, I think we've seen very similar habits going on with TV consumption and the rise, obviously, and the popularity of the iPlayer, but also Netflix, Amazon, and clearly the other players who are now coming into the market. And I think we're seeing a similar thing in audio. I think the other thing is that what we're also seeing is that audio is really succeeding in what it's always done, but especially with an on-demand environment, which is that it fills in the gaps of the day that some other mediums and media can't reach. And whether that's people listening on their headphones when they're going for a run or going on a commute, or just listening to audio whilst they're doing another task like cooking in the kitchen, on-demand audio is really succeeding at filling in that gap in the media landscape.
I suppose it's an interesting comparison that when on-demand first came out, we heard warnings of the death knell of the audio industry, perhaps, or radio, but it seems to be that where there was troubles, potentially, where there were obstacles, people have not just, you know, overcome them, but, you know, brought them on board, become a part of it, capitalised on it almost. So do you see something similar happening with Brexit, where there is, you know, some see challenges, you see opportunity?
Well, I definitely see opportunity in terms of the market, but I think that's not necessarily something so much related to Brexit. I think that's something more related to just the really exciting moment that's going on in audio at the moment. Clearly, Brexit does present many, many challenges and is going to throw up, I think, barriers for businesses like us in many ways, or certainly challenges. I mean, you know, we are a very, very large business within the audio landscape, but we're still a medium-sized business in the general scheme of things. And if we then have to go to expense in terms of additional paperwork or challenges over who we might employ if they're not someone who comes from Britain, then that could well be to the detriment of our business.
It's an important message, because obviously you are one of the biggest independent production companies out there, but you must have started pretty small at one stage, and there will be a lot of small, medium-sized businesses at the moment, you know, audio production companies that are looking at this landscape and thinking, is this a time to even begin? Is this a time to grow? But by listening to what you're saying, you know, with good product, you know, with this current market, now actually seems as good a time as any, almost.
Yeah, absolutely. I think America has led the way in podcasting and in the growth of the podcasting industry, and we're probably 2 or 3 years behind that curve. But there's no doubt about it that there is a huge amount of interest from non-audio companies in audio and in podcasting. And so I think if you have an entrepreneurial mindset, regardless of how large or small your business is, that's clearly going to throw up opportunities for you. There are lots of people who are willing to back, whether that's financially or in other ways, good ideas, good creativity, or ideas that they think can resonate not just in the UK, but beyond the UK as well.
Well, I suppose a lot of this is about creating the right environment. But what tips do you have for any British producers that might want to work with American companies and I guess how to break the US market?
That's a good question. I think there's two different things there. I mean, breaking the US market, it's very feasible to create a great podcast in the UK and for that to be a hit in the US. You need a bit of luck, you might need a bit of marketing support, or you might need someone like Apple to get behind you, but it is possible to just do that from your base in the UK. The separate thing to that is obviously working with US companies, and that's a slightly different thing, but there definitely are opportunities. I mean, two things we've really seen. First of all, there is definitely an interest from US companies in teaming up with UK producers to co-produce ideas or to work together on ideas. Obviously, there's lots of stories that transcend territories beyond the US. I think the other thing we've seen is that there are certainly US companies who are keen to work with UK companies from a post-production perspective, because frankly, the rates in the UK are cheaper than the US. And so an example of that is, for instance, the production of The Daily from the New York Times. I know that a lot of the post-production that happens there does happen in London. I know there's been podcasts from companies like Pushkin Industries or Spotify that have been produced in the States, but where post-production has happened in the UK.
I mean, we're focusing a lot on the US, but there are, of course, other English-speaking markets which people can look to. Australia, New Zealand, just two examples.
There are, though, Australia and New Zealand, interesting podcast places, but obviously the market is much, much smaller. And so I'm not sure whether the opportunity is really one to focus purely on those markets. What we've seen is when we pick up audiences from those places, it's really welcome because we can monetize them, so we do benefit from them. But the numbers we will get from Australia will be dwarfed by the UK and then dwarfed again by the US.
So this focus is on the US market. How would you characterize the difference between the US and the UK approach to business?
Well, that's a tricky question. I think the one thing that always characterizes the US and US companies when you meet them is, frankly, ambition and potentially even speed of movement. I know it's a cliche to say it, but I think you often see that American companies have an attitude of how big can we go or how quickly can we get there, and UK companies sort of have that mindset, but then get worried about the roadblocks that are on the way. You know, I mean, some of that is also driven, I think, by the attitude to finance and risk in the States. So in the States, I think if you go and look to get backing for something with someone else's money, often that can be, I think, probably a bit easier to do than it can in the UK. And again, that's driven out of the mindset of, well, how big can we go and how quickly can we get there?
I want to ask you a little bit more about intellectual property. But before I do that, I just want to draw out a little bit more about, you made this comparison with the TV industry, where UK producers lead the world, and how perhaps you can see that parallel coming with the audio industry.
Yeah, well I mean, clearly that happened with British TV producers, and I think a big driver behind that was the BBC and their commitment to supporting independent production alongside I think Channel 4 as well, and that certainly helped develop an industry that has become a world beater. And I do see some parallels, and I do see that there is that opportunity now for UK audio producers. It's pretty similar. Obviously, the BBC are prepared to commission ideas, as are people like Audible and Spotify. So the only route, or the route to commercializing a podcast doesn't necessarily have to be running, you know, self-funding it and running your own adverts. It can be someone else funding it. And as I said, the US is a few years ahead of us, but the UK is certainly ahead of many other podcast markets. And so there really is the opportunity for the UK audio industry to become a global industry. And I don't say that lightly. I think that's something that if I'm a UK audio producer today, I should, you know, I'd really like people to take that seriously, because I do think it's a real opportunity.
What's your attitude to IP? And how you, as a UK company, hold on to it in a global setting?
Yeah, the IP question, again, is an interesting one, because I think this is really the first time in the audio market that IP has had value. So even though historically, in the contracts that producers would do with the BBC, producers did have a stake in the IP, clearly there wasn't an audio market, so there was nowhere really for that IP to travel to or for it to be monetized in any way. That's completely changed, and it's changed for two reasons. The first of all is what we've already been talking about, which is that suddenly we're in a global marketplace. So an idea that gets developed in one place can certainly be developed in another way in another territory, or can be monetized in a number of different territories. But the other reason is that what we've seen is TV and film producers looking to podcasting as the next frontier for optioning of ideas. And that therefore throws open a fantastic opportunity for producers to see their podcasts or their audio programs turned into movies and films. And the other element around IP is that we're seeing great commercialization going on around ideas. So, you know, live shows, live podcasts, obviously has become a thing that I think many people are aware of now. Merchandising, books, all of these routes weren't really things that got terribly exploited in the old days of audio, and they are elements that are being heavily exploited now.
Give us some of your examples of success.
Well, so for us, we have a number of projects where we're now developing live tours that will run next year. So working with live promoters for tours around some of our podcasts. We are in negotiations, or certainly having approaches, interesting approaches from people over the optioning of some of the ideas that we've already developed and how, you know, how those can be exploited further. And we are actively about to launch a couple of different merchandise ranges around some of our podcasts. And again, those will launch early next year. So everything I've touched on, all those things are really in progress.
I've noticed quite a few of these tours for podcasts, particularly football ones. I listen to quite a few football podcasts and I'm noticing they're doing tours around the country. If they're thinking of taking it to Europe, and I know there's a Spanish podcast that came over here and did it here, that would throw up some challenges. And I'm wondering whether, you know, on balance, you know, bringing it back to Brexit, whether people might decide, well, not to bother because of the what they perceive perhaps to be a bit of headache or a bit of red tape or what may actually be.
I think that could well be true. Obviously, at this point in time, I think it's just really, really difficult to understand what the challenges might be around that. I mean, clearly, taking a production elsewhere and employing people based elsewhere, and you know, are we going to need visas or not? What's going on that front? Very difficult to know, really. But you're right to highlight that as a challenge, because if you've got a show and you've got an audience, let's say in France or Germany, you obviously want to do everything you can to try and exploit that from a commercial perspective.
But it's interesting to hear you talk about the way that almost, you know, books would then be turned into TV or to films, and the idea of it happening to podcasters as well. Do you think that British production companies or producers are thinking almost that big?
No, I don't, and it's something I've spoken about before, industry events, or you know, have written a bit about in terms of in trade press. My perspective is that it helps everybody in the UK audio industry if the UK audio industry is a world beater and is doing well. Obviously, something else would benefit, but clearly everyone else would as well. And so I want the UK audio industry to be as ambitious as possible. And I'm not sure yet that enough UK audio producers are quite recognising the opportunity that's literally staring them in the face, which is for their ideas to be exploited in many different ways, and for them to travel beyond the UK and create revenues for them in other territories.
A lot of the emphasis when we are talking about Brexit has been naturally and understandably around sort of business and economics. And what's worth highlighting, and I think you've done it really well, is we're called the creative industry for a reason. It's what a lot of what we do is creative, and that it would be such a shame if people were holding back over fears of what may or may not happen.
Well, at the heart of creativity is risk taking. you know, it's such a key component of being able to come up with good ideas or to, you know, to have the ambition for those ideas. And unfortunately, uncertainty hinders risk taking. And it's, I think, completely understandable that if you're a business, you pause on decisions you might make or decisions you think are risky because of uncertainty. And when that then starts affecting creativity, that clearly gets to the heart of what our business is about. And so that clearly can't be a good thing. So as far as I'm concerned, you know, the quicker there's a more certain direction, whichever way that may go, the better.
Mm. In terms of additional non-UK revenue streams, what are the challenges here and how to access this?
I'm not sure I can think of that many challenges beyond the obvious ones of maybe legal ones or contract ones. On a basic level, if you have a podcast that is generating audiences in other territories, you know, significant enough audiences in other territories, and that podcast is selling advertising and sponsorship, then there's not very much that limits you in terms of taking that advertising sponsorship from other territories, particularly if you're working with a third-party sales house such as Audio Boom or Acast or companies like Cadence 13 in the States. In that sense, they really act as the clearinghouse, if you like, for the advertising and all the contracts and finance that sits around it. And the podcast producer just receives a statement and a very nice check at the end of that process.
Also, I want to ask about the opportunities in language reversioning.
Language reversioning is really interesting. It was only a few months ago that Wondery, one of the biggest US producers, announced that they were going to be diving into this space in quite a significant way. And they've already turned a few of their podcasts now into multiple languages. We have certainly seen that opportunity. There is a particular interest for turning podcasts into Spanish language, both because of obviously South America and also Spain itself, which, I mean, Spain's podcast listening numbers or the percentage of the population who are listening on a regular basis to podcasts is higher than the UK. So the Spanish market is a very interesting one. Clearly, the challenge, again, probably goes back to a slightly creative question of how you do it, and it depends on the style of podcast. You know, is it where you're just going to lay voices over the top? Are you going to completely recreate the podcast with a whole new cast? If it's more of a studio-based podcast, do you just take the format and reversion it into another language? Lots of different ways to do it, but I do think, again, these are opportunities that anyone who's sitting on a podcast that has decent audience numbers, they should be thinking about this now.
Which is interesting, because you do think, I mean, we've spent a lot of time focusing on English-speaking, particularly the US market, but to think that there are markets a lot closer to home that we could be positioning ourselves to go into is a very interesting one. And like you said, how you work that, we shall see in terms of just rewording, or do you need to actually completely change things? But it's something for people to have in mind, producers to have in mind.
Definitely. I mean, Spain, France and Germany are all really fast-growing podcast markets. And then if you want to get a bit more ambitious, you've obviously got places like China and India that have got huge, huge potential. So Wondery, with one of their titles, did translate it into Mandarin.
I guess it also depends on what your subject is, on what area is, what you're talking about. I mean, if you're talking about China, then obviously the first thing that comes to my mind is football.
Yeah, potentially football, but also I think the shows that have the greatest opportunity for working multi-language are actually ones which are more around great stories, you know, factual storytelling, because obviously a great story is a great story. Same as when you watch a TV show and you can happily watch it if it's in another language, if it's just a compelling story. I think really similar from a podcast perspective. And so the early podcasts that are being reversioned into other languages are tending to be factual podcasts that are 6-12 parters that are telling a great story.
How do you think, looking at the medium term, that the podcasting market will develop and grow internationally? You say you were talking about initially about around stories. Where do you see the direction of travel a little bit further down the line?
I think you'd be a really brave person to call that. I mean, purely because the speed of movement we're seeing is absolutely astonishing. So even if you'd have asked me six months ago, would I expect, certainly for our business, to be seeing the opportunities that are coming now, 6 months forward, I would have never predicted that. And certainly what might be ahead in the next 12, 18, 24 months, I think is impossible to predict, aside from the fact that there is very rapid growth going on now. There is plenty of statistical evidence showing that the audience is growing very rapidly. But what's interesting is in all the major markets, only between 20 and 30% of the audience are listening on a weekly basis. They are listening voraciously into a lot of podcasts, and the growth is very, very aggressive. But clearly what that means is there's a huge amount of the population still to go. And that clearly should be seen in an optimistic light in the sense of massive growth for the entire industry.
We're talking about podcasts and streamed audio content. But what about good old-fashioned live radio? Where does this all sit together?
Well, it's not an either-or. Radio is still phenomenally successful and obviously dwarfs podcasting in terms of audience figures. Certainly in the UK, I think the last stat was, you know, something like over 90% of the population are still listening to the radio every week. I think more and more we're probably going to see them starting to overlap. I mean, I suppose we do see that to a degree already, that successful radio shows are translating through to being successful podcasts. It's a bit like exactly the same thing we've seen on TV. Everybody predicted the demise of live TV. Well, that hasn't happened yet. And live TV broadcasters like the BBC and ITV are still churning out big hits that millions and millions of people are watching at the same time. And that hasn't proven a problem. And the other thing, obviously, radio has going for it, obviously, is its liveness. And particularly when it comes to news and sport, those are really key components that it's going to be very difficult for podcasting to replicate in exactly the same way.
In sum, how much of your focus then is on Brexit, deal, no deal related issues in the short term, in the medium term? Or are you thinking, yes, that's part of our planning, but actually there are bigger opportunities out there?
Yeah, for us, it's probably the second one, in the sense of I think it potentially can be easy to allow Brexit and worries over Brexit to dominate thinking, especially when you're probably a business our size or smaller. I'd rather we think the other way around, which is we're ambitious in what we want to do. We try and move as quickly as we can for those opportunities. And we obviously make sure that we're well informed so that if Brexit is going to present any stumbling blocks or any issues that we need to consider, that we're alive to them and we can then build them into our thinking.
Steve Ackerman, Managing Director of Something Else, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Brexit Ready is produced by Audio UK, the trade association for UK independent radio and audio producers. More details from audiouk.org. All the guidance contained in this podcast series has been compiled in good faith and is correct at time of publication. We would always advise checking for latest details on a reputable website. For example, you might try www.gov.uk/Brexit. I'm Georgie Frost. Charlotte North is the producer. Thanks for listening.